everybody. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here tonight, and I'm glad to be sober. I'm glad to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank my friend Ray and the committee for extending the privilege of me participating in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. It's always been my opinion, and I hope it always remains so, that it's some type of a privilege to be allowed and come and sit with you good people. I hope I don't ever get it through my sick head that I have a right to everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous just because I was lucky enough to stumble into these rooms and get sober and stay that way. I hope that everything I'm ever asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'll always consider some type of an unearned privilege. Because I've looked back on my life for a long time since I've been sober, and I can't find anything that I ever did prior to coming into Alcoholics Anonymous that would allow me to enjoy the good life that I've learned to enjoy, particularly today in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm very glad to be here tonight. I'm extremely pleased to be here, fully clothed and in my right mind. And I only tell you that is because a little over 39 years ago, not very far from here, I came to crawling around in a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. Now, because of a loving God, as He expressed Himself through this program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no longer necessary for me to crawl around on my hands and eat like an animal. And if I don't ever get nothing else out of this deal, I guess I could live with that for a long time, make me feel good. Now, I'd like to be able to stand here tonight and tell you, without a doubt, and without any type of reservation whatsoever, that's where alcohol took me to. Oh, I'd love to be able to tell you that. That's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol ever did in my life, it kept me alive long enough to find Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm as sure as I'm standing here, if I hadn't taken a drink of alcohol, I'd have blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. I'm a misfit. I've always been a misfit. I don't know why I was restless and irritable and discontent, angry and hostile. And, you know, I don't know. I didn't know then, as I've come to understand in Alcoholics Anonymous, that those are the symptoms of the most deadly disease that's ever been known to mankind. It's killed more people in the 7,000 years of recorded history that there is of it than any disease or anything that's ever been known to mankind. And I didn't know I had that. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I just rest. I knew a lot about whiskey. Everybody in my family drank whiskey. I mean, they made whiskey, and they drank whiskey, and they do what people who make whiskey and drink whiskey do. They just gathered up on the weekend, beat each other up. That's what they did. I mean, these people were Irish people. They're Irish, crazy Irish people. They didn't have any type of religion to hold their guilt down. They just got it on, man. I mean, they didn't do nothing. They just got up on Sunday and started whipping on one another. They're crazy people. But you see, this funny thing about that, I always understood that. I said, yeah, understood. You know, it's like putting your foot in somebody's belly. It's almost like a spiritual experience. I understand that violence. I just have always understood. I've always been a very violent person. I didn't know that. What I wasn't able to understand is how these people who did that to one another on Wednesdays put their arms around one another and said things like, we love one another because we're family. And I guess I said, and I don't remember consciously doing any of this kind of stuff. I guess I must have said to myself, if that's what love is, you can keep it. Because I don't ever remember uttering that word to another human being prior to coming to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time after I was here. It was not in my vocabulary. I don't know why it was. I really don't know what's going on. I don't know whether I was born alcoholic or not. It's totally immaterial to me how I caught this disease. Well, you caught it from a toilet seat or how you catch it. It doesn't make much difference. You know, just realize that you got it. I don't know. It seemed like to me that I was looking for an answer. I was born for looking for this answer, whatever it was, which proves to me, looking back on it, if I'm looking for something, it's because I've lost something. And I didn't lose it because I never had it. So I didn't know what it was. It was just this emptiness in me that just kept pouring around. I looked up one day and saw my grandmother. Now, my grandmother lived till she was 90 years old, and she never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life. My grandmother didn't. Now, my grandmother wouldn't think it's a big deal. I've been sober 38 years. Big deal, she'd say. I ain't had a drink for 90. Look at her and say, yeah, Granny, but you should have had a couple from time to time. I'd take the edge off. But my grandmother, they used my grandmother's house for a war zone, these crazy people. And every Sunday morning, she'd get up and step over the bodies. And she put on the best dress she had. She took off. She'd gone somewhere for a couple hours. I didn't know where she went for a while. But while she was gone, something very magical happened to her. Because when she came back, she was a little lighter in her step and a little easier in her being. She kind of danced over these people and cleaned them up and cooked for them and sang songs to Jesus. Now, I took a look at that, and I filed that in my keen alcoholic mind. Now, if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, I want to let you know that this is the only place in the world you're ever going to hear about the keen alcoholic mind. You ain't never going to an Al-Anon meeting and hear about it, I'll tell you that. They may get up there sometime and tell you the keen alcoholic got up last night and peed in the linen closet, but they ain't going to tell you how smart we are. But we will. You ask us a question, we'll give you an answer. We may not even know what you're talking about, but we'll give you an answer. We don't know anything else, we just nod and say, uh-huh, that's true. You ever seen some of them gatherings out there in the lobby? Everybody talks, nobody listens. I mean, there's some couple guys standing over there waiting to get his licks in. You see, my grandfather was, what confused me was my grandfather. My grandfather was a different case than my grandmother. See, my grandfather used to leave when he had money. And he stayed gone until he didn't have any money. And then he came back in all various shapes and forms. One time they brought him back on a wagon. He'd been shot and stabbed, thrown off the second floor balcony of a whorehouse in Kansas City. Now, I took a look at that, and I figured Grandma's got the best deal. Now, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. You know, Grandma ain't getting shot. And so I made another mistake because of my ignorance, because I didn't know, because I hadn't been to Alcoholics Anonymous to learn better. I got some kind of an idea that all I would have to do is go where Grandma goes, do what Grandma does, I'd be like Grandma. I'm not like Grandma. I'm an alcoholic. My grandmother's not. I didn't know then, as I've come to understand here in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I am bodily and mentally different from my grandmother. I didn't know that. I didn't have the slightest idea, so I did what I was supposed to do. I got up one Sunday morning, put my hand on my grandmother's hand, and went over and sat in my grandmother's church and waited for this thing to happen to me that happened to her. And it didn't. And I don't know whether I was dejected about that or not. It didn't make any difference. It just didn't happen to me. And it took me a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous to understand that there was nothing in the world wrong with my grandmother's church. But there was something wrong with the jackass sitting in it, I'll tell you that. What I was doing in that church is what I was doing from my earliest recollection in life. I'm looking for something out here to make me feel better in here. I don't know what it is, but that tells me that if I'm looking for something out here to make me feel better in here, there must be something wrong within here. I didn't know that, so I kept looking for things to make it feel better. And I'm sitting on the back porch of my grandpa's house one day with my grandpa, and he's drinking whiskey out of a fruit jar. And he put it down, and he went somewhere, and I picked it up and took a drink of it. That's all I did. The next couple of minutes of my life is what makes me an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic because I spent the next 20 years of my life creating mayhem out in the world. I'm an alcoholic because I have some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. And what I didn't know then, as I've come to understand now, that everybody who drinks alcohol does not get the same reaction from it that I did. I didn't know that. Because alcohol was a wonderful thing in my life. It went down inside of me, kind of stilled the screaming madness. It kind of put me together, I think. It kind of filled up the holes and stuff in there. Quieted the madness in me. It just slowed down the train that was going on in my head and doing all this. It took me from the black pit of nothingness and stood me into the gray fringes of the business of living. It installed in me some type of arrogance. It said, damn you, world, it's all right. I'm not good enough to be around the good people, but I'm too good to be around the bad people. It's okay right here. That's what alcohol did for me. But that's not the thing that drove me into the gates of insanity and death, the physical reaction I got from alcohol. What got me, our book says, is limited to alcoholics of my type. But what I've come to understand that once I ingest a drink of alcohol into my system, once I ingest it in there, not before, then I'm drinking to overcome a craving that's beyond all human understanding and beyond all human help. I didn't know that. Because what happened to me when I drank alcohol happened to me every time I drank alcohol. It wasn't just once in a while. From the get-go, it was bad. I took a drink of alcohol, and 3 days later, they pulled me out from underneath a bridge, stood me in front of a judge, and sent me to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, they pulled me out of a car in Compton, stood me in front of a judge, and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. Now, that's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I just traveled around. Went from reform school to junior penitentiaries to penitentiaries to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I like nut house better. I mean, it's a little more macho. Come on, if you're going to be bad for Christ's sake, you ought to be bad. I mean, don't quit drinking because you puke a little. Hang in there. Give it everything you got. Alcoholics Anonymous work a hell of a lot better when you don't have any options left. I gave it everything I had out there. I'll tell you that. I threw everything into the battle and lost the battle. Didn't even know I was fighting. Just kept getting it kicked out. I not one time in my life, not once, did I ever come out of one of them institutions after being sober in there for a period of time or undrunk, and started to think to myself, you know what? It's been a long time since I've had a series of those electroshock treatments. I think I'll have a drink. I'm just really, really uncomfortable outside of my straitjacket. I think I'll have a drink. I just can't hardly wait for them cops to beat the hell out of me tonight. I think I'll have a drink. No. I drank for the reason all alcoholics of my type drink after being sober for a period of time. Not to get drunk, just to go, that's why alcoholics of my type drink. But you see, that's all the disease requires of me, is just to take a drink. That's all. And once I take a drink, I have no control about what happens next, because then it's gone. Then the phenomenon of craving takes over, and I got to drink it to the end. It's on that way. It's been that way since my first drink of alcohol. It was that way in my last drink of alcohol. And in between times, there was all kinds of madness. Sitting on street corners, 10 or 11 years old, drinking a bottle of Marco Petri red wine, which was my drink. Most of you have never heard of Marco Petri red wine. You know why? It was the experimental stage of the Thunderbird. That's why you never heard of it. I'll tell you how bad it was. It never saw a grape. But it gets you. I'm drinking this stuff, and I hear stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know whether it's true or untrue. Nothing. I don't really have any opinion on it one way or the other. I hear people sometimes say, alcohol just quit working in my life. Really? It never quit working in mine. In the back of this sick little mind of mine, I know what makes the big hurt go away. I know exactly what makes it go away. And you put me in the wrong place in the wrong time in the wrong set of circumstances, no matter how long I've been sober, how many meetings I go to, how many people I sponsor, how strong my sponsor is, I'll be drunk. I'm an alcoholic. I have no more choice about that than I have about flying around this room. I didn't know that. I'm sitting on this street corner that day, and alcohol ain't doing for me what I wanted to do for me. That's the way that works. I want to be somewhere else. Doing something else, with somebody else, any other time but right now, and it ain't doing it. And the guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, you ought to try these. And he gave me some pills. Now, I don't remember saying to him, what are those? Will they bother me if I take them? Thank God they weren't X-Lax, that's all I can say. We could have a whole new 12-step program, I guess. But laxatives anonymous. You know, I could be standing here tonight as the adult child of a laxative taker. I would have been functional, but Mother sat on the toilet all the time when I was small. Well, I hear stuff stupider than that around here. Work. Thank God it worked, because a couple of years later, I'm on the same street corner with my little gang, hanging out. And we're eating these pellets and drinking this wine. And I don't know, we might be even smoking a little of that non-habit-forming weed, for all I know. Just... the guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm and I ran in and out of institutions. That's what I do. See, I live out there in the streets. And I do what people like me who live in the streets do. I destroy everything that comes in contact with me. And there's a reason for that. You see, I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things and I'm a user of people, so therefore I'm a loser. I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, and I'm self-serving. I got an ego bigger in this whole room. My entire lifetime was spent before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, for a long time after I was here, and maybe even a great deal of time today. I'm really not quite sure of it. Without a conscious thought, or a conscious concern for any other human being who lives upon the face of this earth, I wasn't interested in you at all, unless you had something I wanted. Then when I got it, I cast aside like so much trash, I went on about my business. That's the way I live my life. Now, I didn't live my life like that one day, one week, or one month, or till the heat got on. I lived my life like that from my earliest recollection of life, until a long time after I was an Alcoholics Anonymous. Sometimes even a great deal of time a day. And what that got me is when I came to in that cell in solitary confinement in that penitentiary, there wasn't a single solitary soul left upon the face of this earth that would send me a penny postcard. They were all gone, folks. But they should be gone. And I didn't have any right to have any of them back. I still don't have any right to have anything good and decent in my life just because I was lucky enough to stumble into these rooms and get sober and stay here. Anything that's good and decent in my life, and has been for the last 38 years, is some type of an unwarranted gift from a God I discovered sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Nothing else more or less than that. That's all I can tell you. It's not because I deserve it, and it's not because I'm one of God's chosen people. It's none of that kind of stuff. It's just some type of a grace or some type of a warranted gift that I get sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I get to stay sober and all kinds of good things happen to me doing it. I didn't understand that. On the fourth day of November, 1959, I wandered into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the reason I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous is because the institution that I was in let women come in there. That's why I came. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous over 38 years ago to smell perfume. And I've been honking and sniffing around her ever since. You know, that's not true. Oh, it sounds good. It might be the thing that drove me to. But, you know, I look back on things with more sober eyes all the time. I'm sober, and the longer I get here and the longer I stay here and the older I get in my life, the more I look back and see things as clearly as I can see you. No, I came to that meeting that day. I was a direct answer to a prayer that I'd made on my deathbed almost a year prior to that, or maybe over a year. You see, I was dead on arrival my last time out in the old Los Angeles County Jail, and I was thrown in a bed in the old Los Angeles County Jail weighing 128 pounds in yellow, and the medical profession said I couldn't live till morning. And I laid in that bed for a period of time, watching the days and nights go by without sleeping, without doing anything, just laying there. And one night, because I knew nothing better to do, I screamed out the only prayer I'd ever said in my life. I said, "Oh, God, help me." I thought for a long, long time, when I look back on it, that nothing had happened. Because there was no blinding flashes of light. Nobody come running down the hall with a dozen donuts saying, "We got an AA meeting down there." I didn't get up and wander off into the tulip somewhere. I just went to sleep for a little while. And I don't know how many of you ever kicked a two-year heroin habit, but that's what I was doing. That's the first time I'd been asleep in a long, long time. I'll tell you how sick I was. 2 weeks later, I'm up running around a jail looking for some more of the boys to put me back on the bed I'd just gotten off of. And the reason is this. In the back of my sick little mind then as it is today, when I can't stand life on life terms any longer, I know what'll make it go away. I knew what would make it go away then. Well, I knew then that it wasn't quite doing what it used to do, but I knew it would if I could just find the right combination of things. So I got loaded again. And I stood in front of a Superior Court judge, and he called me a blood-sucking parasite in society. Said I had no right being around decent people. So a woman sitting in the courtroom was pregnant with my oldest daughter, that she cared anything at all about that child, that I'd never be allowed to lay eyes on. And that's the first time in my life that I ever came face to face with me, with nothing between me and me but me. No chemicals, no nothing. And the truth was so overpowering, and I knew so much about my degradation, anyhow, that my mind just shut itself off. And I sit in that solitary confinement penitentiary, in that penitentiary, wandering in and out of total insanity. And that day in November, I wandered into your meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, not to get sober and to stay sober. If I'd have known where I was coming that day, I wouldn't have come. And if you'd have caught me at the door and put a lie detector test on my arm and said, "Are you alcoholic?" I'd say, "No, I'm not." The needle wouldn't move. But I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I don't think I'm any different than the majority of people who come to Alcoholics Anonymous don't know what an alcoholic is. You've got to stick around here long enough to find out what makes an alcoholic. An alcoholic is afflicted with a disease called alcoholism. An alcoholic's not somebody who drinks a lot of whiskey and wets his pants, not necessarily. It could be true, in my case. But there's a book, this book, Alcoholics Anonymous, says there's cases of people, there's heavy drinkers who can quit drinking given any type of reasonable excuse. But what about the real alcoholic? A person like me. Once I start drinking, I'm powerless not to drink again. I didn't know that. I moved in and sit down in the back row in what I lovingly like to call my throne of contempt. Had my coat collar up and my shades on, because I was cool. If I'd have been any cooler when I got here, I'd have froze to death, for God's sake. Remember looking up on the backboard, saw two big gates, and thought to myself, "My God, I've wandered into an anti-aircraft gate." I don't know what Alcoholics Anonymous is. I said to this clown sitting next to me, "What is this?" He said, "It's Alcoholics Anonymous." I sunk down in my seat. I didn't want to see the big gangster hanging out with them winos. Been Gangsters Anonymous, Over Hip Anonymous, Dope Fiends Anonymous. Oh, damn, I like dope fiends. It gives me chills to think about it. Makes addicts seem kind of candy-ass, don't it? I thought to myself, you know, you're always talking to yourself when you're new. I thought to myself, well, I'll sit and wait for these women to get up and tell their racist stories. Now, you got to remember that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there weren't very many young, pretty girls hanging around Alcoholics Anonymous. If they were, they weren't sent up to that penitentiary where I was at, I'll tell you that. These old gals got out to talk. One of them said she drank for a long time. You could look at her and know she'd been somewhere for a long time. She said, "I used to drink." I said, "I'll bet you did. Bad stuff, too." See, I knew everything when I got here. I'm a walking encyclopedia of useless information. I know so much about what ain't true, I don't know what is true. And there I sit, for all intents and purposes, a dead man. And I tell you what's frightening to me. I thought about it today. Here I am, sitting in a room over 38 years ago. I'm sitting in this room, I am staring, at the answer that I had sold my soul for. But I didn't recognize the answer because I didn't know what the problem was. It's kind of hard to find an answer to a problem if you don't know what it is. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I didn't have a clue what was wrong with me. And I'm sitting there. And the reason I kept coming back to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was kind of attracted to these people. I've come to understand today what I know today is that alcoholics are attracted to alcoholics for some strange reason. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous works. I mean, we can spot them drinking and not drinking. I mean, you ever drive down the road at night and watch one of them driving? I like to drive up alongside of him and watch him. Wave. Flash your light at them. They pull over and stop. They think you're the cops. But see, what bothered me was these people, I didn't understand what they were doing. I'd never seen people like. You know what these people did? These people got up on Sunday morning. They bought their own gasoline, drove their own cars. They drove 185 miles up those old back roads to spend 2 hours talking to a room full of people who didn't want to listen to them. People like me who sat in the back row and made fun of them. I'll tell you how sick that is. Here I am, big macho dude, sitting in the penitentiary. I don't know when I'm going home, and I'm making fun of people who are leaving in an hour. But I'm hip, baby. I said to one of these people one day, "Hey," that's the way you talk to them, you know. If you're crazy, you stand on the other side of the room and go, "Hey." They look at you. They ain't coming over there. They just want to look at you. You know what I mean? Now, you ever seen one of them crazy people? I mean crazy people. I'm not talking about you. Crazy people. I mean, the lights are on, there ain't nobody there. You know, you don't know what they're going to do. At any moment, they're liable to do anything. Well, that's the way I was. So they just kind of walked around me. I said, "When do you get out of coming up here anyhow? You some type of a sicko? You like to look at the animals in the cages? What's your deal anyhow?" Guy looked at me one day and gave me one of them tough, deep AA answers. "Well, kid," he said, "when you can answer that question, you won't have to ask it." I dug into my conscience on that. Thought about my hours on the psychiatrist's couch. My sessions with my therapist. Trying to figure out the true meaning of what that meant. And what that guy said is the reason Alcoholics Anonymous is so hard for people like me. It's just too damn simple. You see, when I can understand, when I was able to understand why people do the things like Ray and the committee does and the people under registration out there, the people who sweep the floors and make the coffee, when I got simple enough to understand why they did that, I didn't have to ask the question because I was doing it. It's the most amazing thing that I know of. But I want to share a truth with you. This is a truth. This is not an opinion. This is a truth. Based on my experience of sitting in an average between 5 and 6 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous for all these 38 years, I have learned something here. My old sponsor, Norm Alpa, used to talk a great deal about crossing over some invisible line from controlled to uncontrolled drinking. I have no qualms with that whatsoever. I believe I was born on the other side of it, but that's immaterial. You know what I mean? There's an invisible line here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're an alcoholic of my type, and I don't know whether you are or not, and you don't cross over the line, you're going to die drunk. And that's the line where you've got to cross over from being a taker to being a giver. And if you don't cross over that line and you're an alcoholic of my type, you're going to die drunk. If you're not an alcoholic, it don't make a fiddler's damn what you do. But if you're an alcoholic, you better cross over that line or you're going to die drunk. I don't care what your therapist tells you. I don't care what your sponsor tells you. I don't care what anybody tells you. And I'll tell you why. The book Alcoholics Anonymous says very simply this. Selfishness and self-centeredness seem to be the root of all of our problems. And we must be rid of it or it kills us. That's why we got to cross over from being a taker to being a giver, because we got to give a little around here just for the hell of giving it. And expecting nothing in return, we're just going to do it for free, and we're going to do it for fun. I had to learn those things here. Sometimes I do it grudgingly, and sometimes I do it kicking and screaming. Sometimes I'm getting done by my sponsor dragging me down the hair by the hair of the head, but I get it done. Because he never knows what's right for me anyhow. Sponsors are like that, you know. They just operate in ignorance. Don't shake your head, boister. I'm trying to help you as much as I can. All my effort. Look at you. You know, I got up one Sunday morning a long, long time ago. I don't remember what Sunday it was. Not the day that I remember. I didn't know it was going to be etched in my consciousness. I was going to have to remember the date and all that kind of stuff. Because I tell you what's significant about that. If I'd have known that was my day, if I'd have known that that was the day I was going to go and get knocked on the door and get released from the gates of hell, I wouldn't have come to an AA meeting. So I'd have went over and talked to my therapist, or I'd have went over and talked to my psychiatrist, or I'd have went over and talked to some of my counselors, or some of them other people that I play dominoes with, some of the real smart people, you know, them guys. But I wasn't armed with that fact when I got up, so I went where I always went on Sunday. I went over and sat in that AA meeting, made fun of them people. I moved in and sat down in that row that day, and I sat there, and a little guy that I knew, did 23 flat years in the penitentiary, stood at a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous, told me something I've never forgotten. It makes more sense to me tonight than anything that I know. It'll make more sense to me tomorrow than anything I'll ever learn when I wake up. He looked up there and stood where I was sitting, and he said, "You don't have to live like this no more if you don't want to." He says, "You don't have to do it like this no more." Nobody had ever told me that. People have been telling me all my life, "Johnny, don't drink, swallow, smoke, and shoot." He said, "Don't do it." And every time they told me that, I wasn't doing it. But nobody ever told me how to live without doing it. After the meeting, I went up to this little guy and I said to him, "Les, how do you learn how to live? That's all I wanted to know." And he looked at me and he said, "Johnny, there's a book called Alcoholics Anonymous in the library. If you go home and get that book, I'll go home and pray that you find some part of you in it." I guess he's prayed real hard, that little fella, because I've been a student of the book Alcoholics Anonymous from that day to this day. And the only thing I've ever found in that book is me. I'm not looking for anything else. See, I'm not looking for a way to sober up the world. I'm not looking for a way to cure all society's ills either. What I'm looking for is a way to live peacefully and comfortably and joyously with me and you and God. That's all. Now, there's a strange phenomenon that takes place in my life, and it's this. It seems like to me that the closer I adhere to the principles that are written in that book, and the more willing I become to share that knowledge in this fellowship, just for the sheer joy of doing it, the more peaceful and the more comfortable and the more joyous I live with me and the loving God that made me. It's the most phenomenal thing that I know of. And why in God's world I can get out there in left field is beyond me. Armed with that knowledge of the good life and the good feeling and the oneness with God, and all the things that I get by practicing these principles, how I wander off out there into Never Never Land is beyond me. But I can tell you how it starts. It's a little thought. You know, I say to myself, do you know how much better my life would be if I just had that? But that's right, Johnny. See, we talk to ourselves. Long time sober, too. You don't have to be new. That's right. If you just had that, your life would be a lot better. And I'll tell you, every time I've ever tried to figure out what would make my life better, I've ended up with a handful of pucky. I don't know what makes my life better. I really don't. I don't know what it is that I could add to my life and make my life better. I don't know. The guy said to me today, "What is it keeps you sober?" I said, "I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know whether it's the book. I don't know whether it's meetings. I don't know whether it's sponsorship. I don't know whether it's commitments. I don't know whether it's praying. I don't know what it is. And I'm glad I don't. And I'm glad I don't wonder about that, because if I ever figured out what I thought was keeping me sober, I wouldn't do the rest of it. I just do what's keeping me sober." I don't know. I came out of that penitentiary on the 4th day of June, 1961, to a world that I didn't know anything about. None whatsoever. I had no social skills whatsoever. I had never worked a day in my life. I didn't have a driver's license. I didn't have a Social Security card. All I had was $25 and a "Please Don't Rain on Me" suit. It's issued. Armed with only one thing. The first 9 steps of this program of recovery, to the best of my ability, had been completed while in that institution. And I walked it out with a dream that maybe, someday you would let me come and sit in your meetings with you. That's all I wanted to do. I said to myself, if they will allow me that privilege, I'll do anything they ask me to do. If I could just go sit in their meeting. I never one time in my wildest imagination ever thought that you would ever ask a thing like me to do anything here. Not at all. So I just wanted to come and sit in the corner and be quiet because I knew that there was something here. I didn't know exactly what it was, but I knew there was something here, and I knew I wanted to be here. I came out of that penitentiary. I went home to see my mother. She fell off the step blind drunk. I picked her up and put her on a couch and said, Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting. She said, fine, I think you should. I'd like to be able to tell you that I got sober, and my mother got sober, and my dog got sober, and the kids got sober, and the cat got sober, and we got a catty, a thing there. It ain't my experience. It ain't my experience at all. I sit on the sidelines and for 30 years watch my mother drink herself to death. Somebody said to me one time, did your mother ever get sober? No, my mother never did get sober. From time to time, she got undrunk. And in state of undrunkenness, she came and sat in your meetings with you. But in a state of undrunkenness, sooner or later, she started drinking again. My mother never had the slightest idea, like a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous don't have the slightest idea what sobriety is. They think a state of undrunkenness is sobriety. If you got a rude awakening, come. It hasn't got anything to do with sobriety. I tell you what I learned from that. I learned how very powerless I am. I sit there and watch this woman that I love to death drink herself to death. I had a dream that maybe someday she'd die. Maybe she'd die sober. If she could just die sober, I said to myself. Anything just be better. But my mother, she got drunk and fell down, never came out of the hospital. I was the last thing my mother ever saw in this world. I stood in that hospital room for 2 solid weeks and held my mother's hand and through all kinds of atrocities she had to go through before she finally died. I was the last thing she ever saw. If you'd have walked up to my mother 2 minutes before she died and said to my mother, aren't you proud of your son? Aren't you proud of John? Man, he came out of them ghettos, out of them gangs, out of them penitentiaries. He went into that Alcoholics Anonymous, found he was an alcoholic, and now he's a citizen in the world. He votes and pays his taxes and does all those things to take care of his kids. Aren't you proud of me? You know what my mother would have told you? My mother would have said to you, my son's not alcoholic. His life got a lot better when he quit running around with the Mexicans. Now, if you get into some of these psychobabble groups where they've got all this outside influence, nonsensical stuff, where they think you got to know something around here, they would say to you things like, I guess your mama was in a state of denial. A denial is a river in Egypt. That's where the denial is. My mother was an alcoholic. My mother lived under the delusion that someday, somehow, she was going to control and enjoy her drinking. My mother was not in denial. Denial is just a lie. People are lying to yourself when you say you're denial. A delusion to the alcoholic is truth. Someday, somehow, I'm going to control and enjoy my drinking. The book says that delusion has to be smashed. And for the people who drink themselves to death around here, they never smash that delusion. And they live in busted dreams and fantasies and drink themselves to death. My mother just won case. But she is in the majority of the alcoholics in the world. We're the minority, we who are staying sober here. Not the majority. I don't know what's going on. I went to a meeting one night, a guy walked up to me and said, I'm going to be your sponsor. I said, really? What's that? He said, well, he said, I'm going to help you get it done, John. He's a skinny guy named Norm. I said, what do you want me to do? He said, why do you ask me? I said, you just told me you were going to be my sponsor, for Christ's sake. He said, Johnny, if I can't run my life, what makes you think I can run yours? I said, well, what am I supposed to do? He says, you do what I do. I said, just what is it you do? He says, if you do what I do, then you'll know what I do. Cruel, hard-hearted man. And to find out what he did. Oh, not in AA meetings. We're all better here than we are most everywhere. ask us how we're doing. Just wonderful, thank you. How are you? Wife just ran away with my best friend. Took all the money out of my house. I've lost my job. Bankrupt. I'm dying of heart disease, but it's just wonderful here in AA today. Out there. You know where you live. You know where the waitresses are and the retail clerks and the people on the road. That's what I had to find out about. And I had to find out what you're supposed to do in AA meetings. I didn't know what you do in an AA meeting. I wanted to get up and wander around and see people. See what's going on. Let them know I was there. Hey, get up. I'm going to get some coffee now. Want some? Okay. My sponsor said, why don't you just sit down and shut up? He said, why don't you get a job? What? He said, you know you're a bum? I said, I'm not a bum. He said, what are you? I said, I'm an AA member. He said, you're an AA bum. Bums don't work. Get a job. Get off of welfare, he told me. I said, hold it. Don't you ever say that to me. I ain't never been on welfare. He said, what do you call living in penitentiary? Self-supporting through your own contribution? Got me a job. He got me a job working in the oil field. Big time gangster. Dope dealer. Working in the oil field. You know, somebody stole my first paycheck. You want to hear somebody scream, you ought to hear a thief when they get stolen from them. I'll tell you. Jeez. I ranted and raved and hollered and jumped. I'd have caught that guy. You have another talker here tonight, I'll tell you that. I'd be over there in Folsom with the winners telling you, AA don't work. Yes, it does, for Christ's sake. These charlatans tell you AA don't work. The only person to tell you AA don't work, he never had it work. That's all. I'm here to tell you it does work. Works good. The only therapy that's been introduced in my life in the last 38 years, and I'll guarantee you this, there ain't nobody in this room who lives any better than I do. Nobody. Now, you may have more things, but you don't live any better than I do. I'll tell you that. I live a good life. My life is full and rich. And if you're new, that ought to piss you off. And if you're new, I bet you have a plan, too. You really want to see an old-timer go into hysterics? Walk up to him after the meeting and tell him your plan. It's a beaut. Norm was, God, he was mean. One night, he wouldn't let me drive a car because I didn't have a driver's license. So I couldn't drive a car. Had to humble myself and ask him for rides to meet him. One night in July, it was hot down there. I called him up and said, please, Norm, will you come by and pick me up, take me to a meeting? Yeah, I'll be by there, jackass. Be there at 6 o'clock. We stand on the street corner. I ain't waiting for you. Okay, Norm. So I knew it was hot. We're going to a little place over there in Santa Ana, a little old one-car garage meeting place. Hot. Everybody smoked in. Everybody was evil. Couldn't even see the speaker yet. Oh, so I thought, well, I know it's hot over there. So I put on my new tank top and my new shorts, put my thongs on and slick back my hair, put my shades on, stood on the street corner waiting for old Norm. Old Norm drove up, took one look at me, and drove off. I call him up. In the middle of the night. Norm, what do you want, jackass? Some of us have to work tomorrow. I said, Norm, you left me standing on the street corner. He said, that's right. I said, why? He said, I'm going to ask you a question. He said, what do you want to know? He said, would you go to church dressed like that, Johnny? And I said, no, I wouldn't. He said, you ain't going to my church dressed like that either. I said, how come you yell at me and me, telling me to shut up, sit still, listen? Johnny, if you want to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, you don't want to listen, that's your business. He says, have you ever stopped to think that maybe somebody else did? I said, no. He said, I didn't think so. selfish, self-centered people like you don't ever think about anybody but yourself. He said, if I was you, but I'm not you, I would sit still in every meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous I ever go to and pay attention to everything that happens there from the time they hit the gavel till they say amen. What a valuable lesson that was. I went to a meeting with him one night. And I'm standing back out there at the literature table at the coffee break, and a guy tapped me on the shoulder and said to me, Johnny, and I turned around. He said, man, I heard you talk the other night, and you're a miracle. I said, really? What was it? I said. You know how humble you can get. And he went on and on and on. About 10 minutes later in the coffee break, I'm just kind of... I wandered in, sat down in my chair, stared out the window looking for my spaceship. No, it's coming to get me. Norm's watching me on the way home that night. I'm staring out the window. I know there's a star out there that's mine. He said to me, jackass, are you smoking that stuff? I said, Norm, I don't think you're going to understand this, but I'm a miracle. He slammed on the brakes, damn it, running to the divider, and he said, you're what? I said, I'm a miracle, Norm. He said, where do you get this nonsense, Johnny? I said, name it. He said, jackass, you're not a miracle. Alcoholics Anonymous is a miracle, and you're just a small part of it. Now, I don't know what that does for all the miracles in this room, but I can tell you what it's done for me. It's kept me small enough to stay here. Could you possibly imagine what an egotist like me would do if I thought I was a miracle? You can let your imagination soar. Probably be renting some Greyhound buses to take us all to Waco tonight to do it right this time. I have that type of an ego. Maybe we could start something up down there in Shreveport. Right? I know that. That's why it's necessary for a clown like me to have a sponsor who's stronger than my head. I got to have one of them sponsors tell me, sit down and shut up, big shot. And one says, why don't you just go pick up a chair? Quit bothering people. Well, I'm just trying to visit. It's necessary for me to have a sponsor like that. I used to run around with an old man by the name of Chuck, who was the only father that I've ever known. Man, he was a magnificent man. I guess I probably loved him more than I've ever loved anything in my life before, since, or will ever love anything that much. I don't think I'm capable of ever loving anything as much as I love that old man. And one of my great blessings in life was the last year of his life that he lived. I spent a great deal of time taking care of him, putting him in my lap and rocking him to sleep, and I just loved him to death for it. And I used to ride around with him in the car all the time and go to meetings with him. And he'd say things that I didn't understand. And I'd ask him questions, and I'd try to mimic him by saying the things that he'd say. And I never got it right. I just always would say it wrong. He'd tell me I got it wrong. That's not the way I said it, son. It just, oh, by the way, Ray, the statement is this. If there's anything worse than bad fortune for the alcoholic, it's good fortune. I just thought I'd just let you know that, Ray. Well, as a sponsor, I have to pass on the knowledge. You know what I mean? You thought you were going to get away with it, didn't you? Anyhow, I was out riding around with him one night, and I snuck back. The literature table is dangerous for egotists, I'll tell you that. I mean, if you're looking for some kind of an answer... And literature, they got stuff back there now like comic books and stuff for people like me. You know, just. But I went back, I picked up this thing, and I said, well, I got him now. On the way home, we're coming back from Santa Maria somewhere, he's up there talking. I said, I'd like to read this to you, Papa. He said, what is it? I said, it's a little pamphlet. Picked it up there. He said, okay, go ahead. And he said, why we were chosen? He said, hold it. He said, what makes you think we're chosen? I said, it says right here. He said, we're not chosen, Johnny. He said, we're all God's kids. If I am, you are. And if you are, I am. If I ain't, you ain't. And if you ain't, I ain't. And I looked at him. He said, remember this, my son. He said, it makes the rain fall on the just as well as the unjust. And then I looked at him in my own smug little way, and I said, then how come I'm sober? If I'm not favorable and special in God's eyes, how come I'm sober? When I know people who are far better people than I'll ever be who aren't sober, won't get sober, and can't stay sober. How come is that? And he smiled at me and he said, son, that's because you've come to understand you're one of God's kids and you act like it. I said, well, how do God's kids act, Papa? He said, well, they just wander around and they try to help God's kids get things done, and they do it for free, and they do it for fun. What a novel concept that is to life. Just wander around doing things for nothing. At work, and at home, and play, and wherever I'm at. And just with that type of a concept, when I'm in that state of mind and I'm living by that type of a concept, my life is absolutely and totally glorious. It's the most amazing thing. I thought my sponsor Norm was mad at me because he made me sit down in meetings and shut up and listen. I didn't know he was introducing me to a God of my very own. I didn't have the slightest idea what he was talking. I thought he was just trying to be mean and browbeat me and belittle me because he knew I was going to be more of a star than him one of these days. I didn't know what was going on. I had no idea. There's no way for me to know these things. You know, I'm new in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm like all newcomers. I'm looking for something. I'm looking to get something here. I never had the concept when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that the secret to staying sober in Alcoholics Anonymous is to give something, not to get something. I didn't realize that when I came in the door and I was born into this world, I was given everything that I needed. That's all. There's been some type of a spiritual unrest in my life. All my life there's been a spiritual unrest, and so I put a spirit in it to make the spirit rest. In a novel concept in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've had to have some type of a spiritual awakening. I've had to reawaken that spirit. And the way I reawaken that spirit is through the working solution of these 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and through the firm and guiding hand of a sponsor who's more concerned with saving my life than he is with hurting my feelings. And so I can stand here before you tonight and tell you, I've never had any profound spiritual experiences, but I can tell you that my spirit is alive and well, and I've lived all day long without having to add a spirit to my spirit to make me whole. That's amazing to me. Absolutely and totally amazing to me. I didn't realize that when I sit in this meeting tonight, and I heard the fifth chapter being read, and the 12th tradition being read, and I heard Ray give you a little farewell song. Got to me, baby. I was practicing the presence of God. My papa told me a long, long time ago, he said, son, nature abhors a vacuum, but God abhors a vacuum even more under heaven and earth. He said to me, if I was to empty myself of self, I would be automatically full of God. That's why my sponsor told me to sit still in meetings and pay attention. Because when I'm interested in what's going on in your life, I'm not interested in what's going on in mine. When I'm paying attention to what you're doing, I'm not paying attention to what I ain't doing. And in that very essence of that, I sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, sit right here in this chair tonight, heard the fifth chapter being read, heard the 12th tradition being read, heard this young man get up here as chairman of this conference and say these things. I was more interested in what they were saying, what they were doing. I was in myself. And in those brief moments of my life, I'm about as close to God as I'm ever going to get. I ain't never going to be any closer to God than that. Because I was not in the least bit concerned with whatever little minute problems I may have at this moment. I was more interested in them. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. That's why I go to 5 or 6 meetings a week. That's why I sponsor people. That's why I have a sponsor. That's why I pray. That's why I read this book. That's what I do when I'm asked to do around here. Not to be wonderful or to be good or to be spiritual, because I'm none of those things. I'm an alcoholic. And I've learned how to stay sober one day at a time by sitting in meeting and letting somebody else who knows more better than me show me what to do here. That's all. And there's people, my sponsor, I only have one criteria for my sponsor. One of these. That he's sober longer than me and he's busier than I am. And my sponsor today, been my sponsor for the last 15, 16 years of my life, because old Norm died the day before my 22nd birthday. How inconsiderate that was, I tell you that. But at least made it for another day or two, for Christ's sake. I went down to talk over a problem with this friend of mine, a guy by the name of Clancy in the mission one time. And he gave me the answer to the problem, but I didn't need a sponsor. I'd been sober 22, 23 years. I sponsor a lot of people. I go to a lot of meetings. I don't need no sponsor. What do I need a sponsor for? Well, I'm goofy. That's why I need a sponsor. I'm running my own life. That's why I need a sponsor. I ain't got sense enough to direct myself most of the time. My head is always saying, oh, that looks good over there. So I'm sitting there and I'm laying this big problem on Clancy. And he gave me this big answer, but I'd already made that answer. Find what I need him for. I turned to walk out that day, the door of that office, and I don't know what this was. Maybe, Norm said, maybe the old shooter wasn't ready to knock that angel off my shoulder that day. Maybe. You know, I'm not thinking about drinking. I'm not thinking about leaving AA. I'm not inactive. I've been to meetings upon meetings upon meetings. I'm not one of them kind. I just ain't there no more. That's all. I turned around, and I looked at Clancy, and I said, Clancy, I need a sponsor. He looked at me and he said, I thought he was going to say, what an order, I can't go through with it. And he put his glasses down on his nose and he said, well, let's give it a try. And I said, what do you want me to do? He said, well, I want you to call me every day and I want you to go to the Wednesday night meeting. 15 years. Guy asked me the other day. He said, you still call Clancy every day? And I said, yes, I do. He said, why? He said, he hasn't told me not to yet. I don't know what's going on half the time. But I'll tell you something. In the last year of my life, the last maybe 14 months of my life, I've been walking around the world with a heavy heart. But you can stay sober here with a heavy heart. That doesn't mean I'm going to drink. That just means I have a heavy heart. But my God, in his infinite wisdom, although he has removed something from me, you know, the only person I ever loved probably from my life, he replaced it with something else. And what he replaced it with was my beautiful little youngest daughter, Jackie. Jackie's a couple of years sober now, and she brings with her that little 7-year-old grandson of mine. And so every Tuesday, Jackie and Dalton and I go to dinner. And Dalton sits up in the front seat of the car and talks a mile a minute. Yakety, yakety, yakety. And I tell him, Dalton, why don't you keep quiet? He says, I got a lot of things to say to you, Grandpa. And he just lights my heart up. And last Tuesday night, she called me over to her house. And she got some jackass standing there with her. He walked up to me and he said, I want you to know, he said, I'd like to ask for your daughter's hand in marriage. She's already accepted it. I looked at him, gave him the look. And she started crying and she said, Daddy, I want you to walk me down the aisle. She said, I told you when I was a little girl that if I ever got married, and she'd never been married, I want you to walk me down the aisle. So you see, no matter what it looks like over here, and no matter what you think it may be, all I ever do is I get up and I go to my meetings on Monday night, and I put my chairs away, and I have my guys in on Tuesday. And Wednesday, I make coffee at that Pacific group. And Thursday, I go to my 12 and 12 under the bridge workshop. And Friday, I get in a car on an airplane, and I go somewhere in AA. And I'm busy in AA all the time. I'm sponsoring all these people. And you can do all those things. No matter how you're feeling, I just keep doing that. That's my thing. And somehow or other, whatever was my heavy heart has been heavy, it's gotten lighter because over here, God brings in something else again. Even more fulfilling and more lightening. The closeness between my daughters and I. My daughter now is a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and so am I. We're the only two in the family. And what a good life. So if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous or you're sitting in this meeting and you have a little heavy heart, I'll just keep on doing these things because I'm sure that your load will be lightened. And if you're walking down the street, pretty soon something will come sliding in there that will make you forget your heavy heart. That's all. This is a wonderful thing, Alcoholics Anonymous. What a wonderful opportunity that you and I have to walk down this road hand in hand with one another in love, sharing our experience, strength, and hope. That no matter what comes down the pike, no matter what it is, we can do it. I can't, but we can. One of the greatest things I ever learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is it's not I, it's we. You know, when I call my sponsor on the phone at midnight, I'd say to him, Norm, my program ain't working. Norm, he'd say, why don't you try ours? That's all. It's a simple little word. That ain't my program, it's our program. Now, when I die, there's been three people in my life. Well, there's been a lot of people in my life, but three people who've been very instrumental in my life. One of them was Norm Alpe, my sponsor. One of them was Chuck Chamberlain, who was my father. And my current sponsor, a guy by the name of Clancy Emerson. And those three men are very instrumental in my life. Well, there's been a lot of people who are instrumental in my life. A lot of giants have walked through me. These people, I'm sure as I'm standing here, are God's kids. And the reason I know they're God's kids is because they did what my papa told me God's kids do. I watch these men, every single one of them, get in their cars night after night after night after night and go out to these meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and try to help these kids get things done that need to be done. These are God's kids. I'm as sure that I'm standing here. Now, when I die and I get to wherever I'm going, if there ain't birds singing, flowers in the air, people like you, and particularly people like my papa and Norm Alpe, I don't want to go. I'm sorry. And I'll tell you why. It's because poor people like that and people like you came into my life. I lived in absolute and total hell. If hell is any hotter than where I was before you came into my life, I hope I don't ever go there. I don't ever go. So I've lived with hell and I've lived with you in heaven. And I like it better here. I like it better with the people that I spend my time with and I joke with and I share my life with. I love these people. I can love you. I love you more than anything in the world. Because you're the reason I am. Every single thing that I have in my life, I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything. Everything I may ever hope to have in my life, I will owe to this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And dear friends, you better believe this. It's a long, long walk from a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary to where I stand right now. But for the grace of God, AA and good friends like you, I could have missed it all. God bless you. Happy birthday.